meeting is now being recorded.
Let the last few stragglers in. All right. I want to be sure, can everyone hear us? Carlos, are you able to hear us? It sounds like you might be having problems with your bridge.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, great. All right. In that case, I think we can get started now. Just to quickly go over today's agenda, the bulk of our call today is going to be a discussion with the analysis group who just joined the line. They are the firm that's been conducting the economic study for ICANN. And then following that, they're going to give a short presentation, and we're going to allow quite a bit of time for discussion. Following that, we're going to get updates from our two invited guests from our two working groups on the terms of reference and on the work plan, and go over where we stand on those two documents. So I think before we get started, we wanted to do a roll call.
Charlotte, can you do it as Pamela is sick today?
Sure. Hold on one second. I've got a million things going on right now. Carlos, from the review team, we have Carlos Bro Gutierrez. So, looks like he just dropped off, perhaps. David Taylor, Dejan Dujic, Drew Bagley, Jamie Headland, Jonathan Zuck, Jordan Buchanan, Kylie Kahn, Maureen Capen, Megan Richards, Stan Besson, and from staff we have myself, Aliza Gopian, Margie Milam, Pamela Smith, Erica Randall, and Karen Lentz, and Karen Mulberry. I believe that's it. Is anyone else on the call that I missed? Looks like Carlos just rejoined. We have two unidentified numbers, one ending in 9755 and one ending in 5300. I'm not sure who those people are.
So the 5300 is analysis group, and this is Gregory for talking.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I'm here with colleague of mine. You should probably introduce himself too.
Alex Monicabo.
Okay. And then 9755 number? Okay. Thanks, Erica. And I guess I'll turn it back over to Aliza or Margie.
I can take over. Thank you. So, as I mentioned, we have a few people on from analysis group. Greg, I'll let you introduce your colleagues. But just by way of short introduction, as I think we all already know, ICANN commissioned this economic study that was published last year in response to one of the interim recommendations from the IAG CCT, which preceded this group's work. So, as I said, a phase one sort of baseline study was published last year. An analysis group is now working on preparing for phase two to allow us to see if there's been any changes in the areas which they studied over the last year. So I'm just going to let Greg take over now. And, Greg, I think I have control over your slides, so if you just let me know, I will advance them as you go along.
That sounds good. Thank you, everyone, for letting us talk with you. We look forward to your feedback and any ideas that you might have to kind of help to improve the phase two work that we're doing. As I mentioned, I'm here with a colleague of mine, Alex Monicavo, and Lau Christensen may also join later. He has kind of a busy schedule this morning. He's another member of the team that's been kind of helping to put our work together. And I think with that, if you could go to the next slide, that would be great. So just a little bit of background, although I'm sure that most of you are aware of this. So we kind of set out and were retained by ICANN to assess the competitive effects associated with ICANN's new GTLD program, with the goal at least of analyzing competitive effects in the past. So, for example, as the first new GTLD entered, kind of in the present, and then looking forward to the future as well. And our team includes Catherine Tucker, who's a professor at the Sloan School at MIT, myself, and then I've mentioned some of the other colleagues that are involved in the work as well. So if we could go to the next slide, please. So in kind of informing our approach, we kind of begin with the assertion that registrars and registries can compete on both price and non-price factors. I think price is relatively straightforward. There's kind of the prices that registries charge registrars, and then there are the prices that registrars charge individuals who are looking to purchase or lease a domain name. Non-price factors are a little bit squishier. But they might include things that would allow either registries or registrars to differentiate themselves. So, for example, they might try and offer specific GOTLDs. Registrars may think about offering different types of ancillary products that make their services kind of more competitive in the market than as compared to other registrars and other factors like that. So, kind of given that starting point, what we did is we put together kind of a carefully constructed sample of over 100 new GTLDs and 14 legacy TLDs. The sample was primarily designed to capture those new GTLDs that either had kind of large historic numbers of registrations or that had larger numbers of recent registrations, with the slight caveat that once we selected TLDs based on those selection criteria. We then wanted to make sure that we were kind of filling out what we term competitive sets. So, for example, if we ended up pulling in .photo as a result of it being a GTLD with a large number of registrations, we looked to see if there were other similar GTLDs that we thought might compete against .photo, so, for example, .pix. We also wanted to ensure that each of ICANN's regions were included in the ultimate sample, which they are. And we also, once we had that sample, we then submitted data requests to both registrars and registries, as well as CEDO, which is kind of a secondary market purveyor of data. And I think next slide, please. So in terms of the data that we ultimately obtained, and this is largely informed what was possible to do in the phase one study, we collected historical registration volume data from ICANN using the monthly transaction reports for all the legacy TLDs and GTLDs in our sample. And as the slide indicates, those data span from roughly late 2009 through early 2015, although in phase two, we'll certainly be able to obtain more up-to-date data. We also obtained historical wholesale prices from registries, once again, for most of the legacy TLDs and GTLDs in our sample, and these data go back as early as May 2001 for some of the legacy TLDs, not all, and then once again end in April 2015. And then finally, and this will probably be a point of discussion later, we unfortunately received very kind of minimal responses from the registrars that we contacted. We are hoping to obtain transaction-level data, and in particular, historical transaction-level data, to get a sense for kind of the extent to which competition might have been taking place among registrars. But unfortunately, none of that data was obtained. So what we were forced to then do was to actually go to the registrars' websites and kind of physically scrape the data for their current retail prices. And here we pulled one-year registrations and add-on offering prices and collected them in April of 2015.
And then, yeah, if we could go to the next slide.
Oops, I think we skipped one. Yep, thanks.
So this table just gives a summary of all the data that we collected. In terms of wholesale prices, registries were actually pretty good at responding to our data requests. So we have pretty good coverage of historic wholesale prices, and like Greg mentioned earlier, our retail prices, we had to rely on data that we collected ourselves. And then registration volume data we have from the monthly transaction reports, very good coverage of all of the GTLDs in our sample, And that really has full historical data on their registration volumes for each GTLD. And then if we could go to the next slide, we're going to start moving into kind of talking about the findings from the report. But really quick, just I'm not sure how familiar everyone is with the distribution of registries. So as of our phase one study, this was this table shows where different registries are located by region. And as you can see, there's quite a few registries in North America, Europe, and Asia, and then substantially fewer registries in Africa and the Latin America region. That said, we do have GTLDs in our sample that are operated by registries in each of these regions as part of our sample. And then if we could move to the next slide, we can start talking about some of the results in phase one. So these were our findings in phase one. And I think it's important to keep in mind in phase one, our primary objective was to just establish a baseline that we are going to be able to use and compare to in phase two. So in terms of registration shares, if you look across registries and registrars, in terms of who has, where all the registrations are going, there's more dispersion in new GTLD registrations when we compare to legacy TLD registrations, and we'll have a graph later that demonstrates this. And then when we look at wholesale prices, new GTLD prices, on average, they end up being higher than legacy TLDs, and we do see a little bit more dispersion in the price levels of new GTLDs. And a similar thing for retail prices, new GTLDs have higher levels of price dispersion, and typically the distribution is a little bit, the average price for new GTLDs is a little higher, which isn't unexpected given that they have higher wholesale prices. And then when we look at add-on products, we'll also have a table kind of showing the distribution of various categories of add-on products that the registrars are offering. And one of the things we find is that if you look at sort of what's the cost to a consumer of creating a website, registering the domain name, that registration fee is can be a relatively small part of the overall cost, and we'll see that at the end. So if we move into the next slide, we can start talking, kind of seeing some of these results a little more specifically. So this table just shows a distribution of registrations across registries. So the first column, we're looking at the share of all registrations. So that includes legacy and new GTLDs. And I think everybody knows that .com is by far the largest TLD in terms of registrations. So VeriSign, we see they have a substantial share of all registrations. And that doesn't change much. In the next two columns, we separate this out by legacy TLDs and new GTLDs. And so it's not, there's not too much of a change to the share of legacy registrations because, like we said, .com is really dominating that first column. But if you look at the share of, if you just look at new GTLD registrations, how those are distributed across the registries is a little more dispersed. You don't have anybody that has above 50% of all registrations. The two biggest players are Donuts and XYZ. XYZ because that TLD has had the highest registration volumes so far, and Donuts because they have the highest number of individual TLDs that they operate compared to any other registry. And then if we move to the next slide, what we do is we look at this same kind of distribution, but across how they're distributed across registrars. So if you look at all domain registrations in our sample, you have GoDaddy with they have over 30% of all registrations. But if you look at the new GTLD registrations, again, it's a little more dispersed. GoDaddy still is a major player, but they're not as dominant as they were if you look at all TLDs. So in both the across registrars and across registries, there's a little more dispersion in new GTLDs, at least as of April 2015. And that's one of the things we're going to revisit in phase two. But if we go to the next slide, we can start looking at wholesale prices. And so We have really good, pretty good historical data for the legacy TLDs. A lot of this data is coming from the price change notifications that legacy TLDs will send to ICANN. And, you know, legacy TLDs have been around for a longer time period, so we have quite a bit more data in terms of when they've been doing price changes. And you can kind of see from this graph there's been a general upward trend in the prices over time, especially kind of in the last few years. And I think one thing to keep in mind when you're looking at this is that legacy TLDs are, several of them are subject to price caps, and that's not something that new gTLDs are subject to. But I think the main thing we notice here is this, that there's this been an upward trend in the legacy prices over the last 10, 15 years. And then if we can move to the next slide, now since we don't have, since new gTLDs haven't been out for as long and we don't have historical retail data, we're looking at a snapshot of the price distribution in April 2015. So the left panel here shows the distribution of wholesale prices of TLDs in our sample, and the right shows the same distribution for retail prices. So in both, I think what you see is that new gTLDs have a higher average price, and their distribution is a little more spread out, a little more dispersed, and that's the case in wholesale prices and in the retail prices that we collected. And again, this is a distribution we're going to be very interested in how these prices have changed over the last year, both at a wholesale level and at a retail level. And then, so if we move to the next slide, we get into the add-on features. So add-on features are a little trickier. All registrars kind of offer quite a similar set of different add-ons. They vary based on whether or not they provide these services themselves or whether they go through a third, offer them through a third party. And so what we did was we grouped various add-ons that we saw registrars offering into several different categories. And as you can see, the prices range for a lot of these services. They range quite a bit, and this is because there's lots of different levels of quality within a single one of these categories. Like servers, server space can vary from having something that's very minimal to having, you know, a ton of server space, and these costs per year vary quite substantially. One thing that's interesting that we thought was interesting was there are a few categories that most registrars offer and that are typically very cheap. So forwarding is one. That's a service I think for many registrars is provided either at a really minimal cost or even for free. And there's a few other services that we do see registrars offering for free. In fact, quite a few categories we've seen at least one registrar offer them for free. But at the same time, even within those categories, you have other registrars offering them for prices that can be quite substantial for a year registration. But like what we noted earlier, if you think about the cost of registering a website, even if an individual wanted just like a little bit of server space, email, and hosting, because you have to have somebody host your website, the overall cost of registering a website is more about these add-on features than it is about the cost of the actual registration in some cases. And obviously, you know, that just depends on what TLD you're using and what the registration price is going to be. But on average, the registration cost is a small part of, you know, creating a website. And then if we move on to the next slide, I think we're going to start kind of talking about phase two.
Yeah, so as Alex mentioned when he first started talking, phase one was really designed to establish a baseline with the idea that we would revisit the results about a year later in phase two. And so that's what we want to talk about now. And kind of in terms of updating our work, there's a couple things that we have in mind, but of course we look forward to everyone's suggestions on the phone. So First, for the gTLDs and legacy TLDs that are already in our sample, the plan is to go back to the registrars and registries. And once again, for the registries, we'll request wholesale data. For the registrars, the hope is that once again, or that we'll request transaction level data, although we don't hold out a lot of hope for obtaining any of that. And if we don't, then we will once again go to the registrar websites and scrape the data to determine what retail prices are. We're also planning to go back to CETO to determine to what extent we might be able to receive or look at any of their secondary market transaction level data. Once again, that might help to inform the extent to which various gTLDs are competing against each other. Next slide, please. We're also planning on adding additional new gTLDs to our sample since the year has passed. And so the plan is to add approximately 25 new gTLDs, which will bring us up to over 125 total new gTLDs in our sample. The second bullet indicates that we're also, in terms of our request to registries, we're going to ask them, to the extent they're willing to provide it, lists of their premium domain names, as well as wholesale prices associated with those. And then finally, several of the comments that we received during the public comment process on the phase one report were interested in us doing a little bit more exploration with respect to what we're calling geo-TLDs. And so here the idea is to look at specific geographical regions, for example, dot Berlin or the Berlin area, and to see, as for example, dot Berlin came into being in the market, do you see that competing more vigorously with either new gTLDs or legacy TLDs than perhaps you kind of generally see in the marketplace? And with that, I think we are at least done with kind of our formal presentation, but we look forward to your questions. I know I've already seen one come across the chat window from Jordan.
Thank you, Greg. And if you want to just dive into those questions, perhaps starting with the one Jordan posed, go right ahead.
Yeah, so Jordan, your question is a good one with respect to the price caps and whether we could overlay the price caps on the graph where we show legacy gTLD wholesale prices over time. I assume that data is available, and I'm guessing there are people on the phone that can speak to that. And assuming that it is, then it's something that I think would be really good to add to the work. But I will let someone who knows a little bit more about the existence of that data say whether or not they think that we could get it. Or if not, I think it's something that we could go back to the individuals at ICANN that we've been meeting with and talking with to see whether or not it could be provided.
Yeah, I think that's public. This is Jonathan Zook. I think that's public information, the CAPS data is.
Okay. It seems like it should be.
I think it's just a matter of getting the kind of historical registry agreements, because those price caps are going to be updated each time there's a registry agreement. Also, just for reference, I think right now, I was looking into this yesterday, as of today, that the April price we had for .com, for example, is at the price cap that, according to their most recent registry agreement. But I do agree that it'll be interesting to see if they're always pricing exactly at their cap, or if there's if they kind of start below and move up and mm-hmm. see how they make those decisions.
And then I'll move on to the next question. I think the next question, which is from Carlos, is asking whether the new gTLDs in the second phase will include IDNs. And the very short answer is yes, we will ensure that there are at least some. I think the open question is how many we'll decide to ultimately include, but there will at least be several. And I would note that we'll also be including, or that we did include some IDNs in the original sample of over 100 new gTLDs as well. And then I'm going now to David's question, which asks, how are you proposing to select the additional 25 new gTLDs in the next phase? It's essentially similar to the approach that we took for the phase one report, which is to look at both kind of historically, or GTLDs with large historic numbers of registrations, but more so in the phase two work is to select those new GTLDs that are also kind of have higher numbers of more recent registrations, with the caveat that I think we'll probably oversample a little bit from IDN GTLDs just to make sure that we have a sufficient number of those. And
I see that. I was going to say Stan has his hand raised.
Yeah, this is Stan Besson. I don't know whether Lisa shared these with you. I have actually four, I think, quick questions. One is that your table two provides information as of November 2014. It seemed to me it would be useful to produce the same table for a somewhat earlier point in time. The point in time I have in mind is just before the introduction of the first new GTLD. It may not be that not much happened during that first few months, but I would be interested in what happened over that period of time. It seems to me that's an alternative baseline to the one that you have. Second, you report registrar shares, I think it's in your table three, and that's on the assumption that there's basically one GTLD market. I think it might be useful, because some people have argued that each GTLD is a separate market. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's been contended. If you believe that, then it would be useful to know something about the distribution of registrar shares within each GTLD. Maybe just do a first sample of GTLDs and just calculate HHIs for them. I think that would be probably easy to do. I think the question about prices has already been mentioned. I'd be interested in the one question that has been sort of raised all along is whether the new GTLDs would affect the prices charged by the legacy GTLDs. I'd like to know whether the prices were at the cap before. Are they still at the cap? Have they fallen below the cap? Have they moved to the cap? That would be interesting to know.
Finally, I
looked yesterday at the distribution of new GTLDs and discovered that hundreds of them have fewer than 100 registrants.
We have seen that as well.
Yeah, and one question, you should just keep your eye open for is the following. If there's any exit during this period of time, if this was another industry with those kinds of revenues, I would expect people to start exiting. So just, you know, be alert to the possibility of exit. I'd like to see whether that, in fact, happens.
So can I clarify on the exit question? Are you thinking more, did a registry itself exit or did the TLD exit? Because one thing I could see is a registry picks up gets a TLD, thinks they can be profitable with it, and then ends up not being. And so while the registry itself is probably going to disappear, the TLD, I think their first move would probably be to try to, sell that off to another registry operator. So are you thinking
Good question. I think any of the GTLDs, there's a 900 new ones, something like that, is there any evidence that any of them have disappeared?
I would
expect that to happen over time, given the low sales that some of them have.
But I think it could be interesting to look at kind of the two different versions of looking at if they have literally disappeared and no longer are in existence, but also look for whether or not we've seen any that have been transferred to other registries. I think both are indicative of. Oh, go ahead.
The technical question, I guess, is what. Are these guys below minimum viable scale?
Right. Yeah.
That's it.
No, I agree. And so I think all your comments are well taken, and I think we will kind of undertake the analyses that you suggested. The only thing I would like to tweak ever so slightly is to your point about looking at shares within TLDs or GTLDs. I think I like the idea of looking at shares specifically. I think I would stay a little bit away from actually calculating HHIs because it then begins to one could then infer that we think that that is a market if we're calculating HHIs. And so I think shares are just a little safer kind of from a kind of a optics perspective, but wanted to get your reaction to that.
Yeah, I think in any of these cases, I think what I would say is if this is a market, here's how concentrated it is. And not necessarily take the position that it is a market. I think I regard that as an open question at this point. But
yeah,
HHI is a convenient way to summarize how concentrated the registrars, distribution of registrars is for a given TLD. If you prefer the four firm concentration ratio or the whatever, that's okay with me. You need some summary statistic.
Yeah. No, that point's well taken.
Carlos, you wanted to jump in on Stan's questions?
Carlos, I can't hear you. You might be muted. David Taylor, do you want to go ahead and we'll let Carlos type out his question?
Question on the registration shares, seeing as it's up there, and the table there, it's got donuts with a 30% share and XYZ at 21.3%. And I was wondering there if you'd considered or followed the variation in XYZ registrations, because I know that I think they were the first one to reach 750,000 near the end of 2014, which is why we'd have them very high here. But I think they dropped off because a lot of them were being sold very, very cheaply, and then they dropped off considerably. And that's sort of my first question. The second question, which follows on from that, is are you looking at, or will you be looking at renewal rates as well in the TLDs you've considered when you're looking at the next 25?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And our plan is to look at renewals in part because of the issue that you brought up with respect to XYZ. So I think we'll be looking to see kind of to what extent individuals who had a 1-year registration have decided to kind of continue along with that registration. And that's something that's easy to identify from the monthly transaction reports.
Okay, thanks.
Jordan, go ahead. Sure, thanks. I have a couple of, well, three questions, I guess. The first one's on the same slide, so it's a good place to start. I'm wondering, rather than looking at the share of legacy registrations versus the share of new GTLD registrations, have you looked at all, or would it make sense to look at in the phase two report of registrations that were new registrations that happened starting at the inception of the new GTLD program or, like, over some specific period of time, as opposed to, because I think it's not that, like, as you point out, it's obvious that COM has a lot of existing registrations, but, like, what's the effect of the new GTLD program been on new registrations?
Obviously,
someone has a choice between a .com versus a new GTLD is, at registration time, is this affecting their choice as opposed to if you already have a domain? I would imagine that's fairly sticky. I guess there's a sub-question in that is, have you given any thought to measure effect on new registrations versus renewal of existing registrations? I've got two other questions, but maybe start with that one.
So that is not something that we looked at, but I think it's a really good point. And so I think it is something that would be worth adding to the mix when we kind of going forward and thinking about what we put in the phase two report. We did do a little bit of work looking at changes in growth rates for legacy TLD registrations as new GTLDs began to enter, and we really didn't see much in the way of any effect using that metric, but it's possible if we were to look at new registrations, the story might be a little different.
Great. Yeah, I think the growth rate's probably like a good second order effect, but yeah, it would be good to look at the actual sort of the pool of new registrations, maybe as a I don't want to say distinct market, but at least distinct phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
My second question relates to price. I think I actually brought this up at the Dublin meeting as well. I'm glad to see you guys are looking at premium prices in the new GTLDs, which is interesting. I think, though, we're doing a slightly odd thing, which is sort of looking at the price of the wholesale price of a new registration in TLDlike.com versus looking at the wholesale price or the new registration price of a TLD, like one of these new TLDs that is essentially virgin space, which strikes me roughly if we go back a 150 years or something like that, looking at the price of new land being sold in Manhattan versus new land being sold in Oklahoma at the time of the Oklahoma land rush or something like that. It's not really a particularly relevant question because the sort of dynamics of the new sales or the virgin land available in both of those places looked probably very, very, very different. And so I'm wondering if there's any way that we can consider looking at sort of comparable string registrations. I think in Dublin responses, we don't have transactional data, which I understand makes this harder, but perhaps looking at, manually once again, looking at, if I wanted to register, I think you said .photos or something like that's in your list, but like BryceCanyon.photos versus BryceCanyonPhotos.com versus BryceCanyon.com, like what are the prices of sort of related strings or what would you be able to get? And in .com, I'm particularly looking at what the secondary market would look like because often the string that the person's registering in a new GTLD is not going to be available in .com in the primary market, so a person would be forced to go to the secondary market in order to get a sort of fair comparison of what the actual cost of registering an equivalent string would look like.
So I like your idea. I guess they would need to give us a little bit more thought as to how to kind of operationalize it in a way that would kind of allow us to draw broader conclusions. And I guess another option is we could do kind of do this in a couple of instances to see in the extent to which this was an issue. And if we were seeing kind of different prices, then that might suggest that it's worth doing a broader analysis. But so I guess if Alex and myself and the rest of the team could give a little bit of thought to that, but we'll certainly kind of do our best to make sure that it ends up in the phase two report. But I want to give, just like I said, a little bit more thought.
Yeah, my suggestion was highly non-operationalized, so I certainly understand that you guys would need to figure out how to do this at scale to get.
If, for example, we were to get Receda was willing to provide at least some of their secondary market data to us, and that's then it would be much easier to do. And if we were to get exceedingly lucky and have a registrar or multiple registrars who are willing to participate and provide us with more detailed data, then we could do it pretty easily as well, too. And then barring that, then I think it's going to be difficult, but I guess it doesn't mean that it's impossible.
Sure. And happy to talk with you offline about whether we could provide data for Google domains.
Sure, that would be great.
My third question is, so looking at the ancillary services or add-on services, I noticed there's really high levels of variation if you look at the sort of minimum to maximum and even median and mean. And I'm wondering if it might make sense to construct some sort of like standard shopping basket or something like that and say like what would it cost to register a domain name with these three standard things across various registrars as opposed to just looking at the price of the individual services, because it could be that some registrars are charging $50 for privacy and then throwing in web hosting for free, but really if registrants typically want some consistent set of services, it might be interesting to look at a consistent basket.
Yeah,
I totally agree that that would be a better approach, and that's something that we had wanted to do in phase one, but the problem we faced was knowing what the consumers are actually choosing so that we could construct this typical basket, because without transaction level data, we can't see, are people registering a website, do all of them, need email, do all of them need any of these services. So I guess, one thing we could do is make assumptions about what we think the typical person is using, and kind of standardize it that way. But that was our reservation with doing that in phase one, is just not really knowing what a typical person is going to end up needing.
Yeah, that's fair. I think maybe we could think about whether there's some interaction with the Nielsen survey or a Nielsen survey that we could do in conjunction to figure that out.
This is Jonathan Zook. I want to ask a question on behalf of Carlton, who's not on the call, which is, did you at all consider the relevant market being broader than CLDs and including social media, like online identity or something like that, as the as a market, is it potential that there's a shift away from domains to social media, to Facebook or something instead?
So the very short answer is we did not. It's an interesting question. It seems a little bit of a stretch to me, although it's just my first reaction.
I'm just trying to think of how, because I get the point, and
yeah.
I understand that, yeah, like, for example, YouTube.
I hate making somebody else's case, right? I mean, that's a hard thing to do, but, there's obviously a lot of people registered at the third domain, at the third level, right, and as opposed to the second level. There's, a lot of bands that don't have a website, but instead have a fan page on Facebook, and people that might normally create their own website or their own domain are satisfied with a Blogspot identity or something like that. So
it's an interesting...
Does the proliferation of new domains have an impact on that?
Yeah, I would think for kind of the larger entities that are out there in the world, they're likely to have presences on both kind of a domain but also on Facebook and maybe a blog and maybe on other forms of social media like Twitter. For smaller entities, so for example, someone who just wants a blog, I could see if they would just be satisfied with a Blogspot.
I think the big question is, is there any data that we can utilize to look at this?
Yeah.
And that's where I'm having doubts about.
Yeah, it would certainly be, I think, very difficult to get kind of data on how the new GTLD program has affected competition more broadly outside of TLDs. But why don't we give a little bit, we'll kind of add it to the list of things that we need to think about and respond to, and then we can kind of, I don't know the best way to kind of circle back with Carlos, but I'm sure we can figure out some way.
Okay, yeah, thanks. And maybe we can connect with you offline, and I can connect you with folks in the ALAC that raised this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great.
Carlos, did you have additional questions? I've been trying to keep track of them as you are asking them.
No, thank you very much, Jonathan. I think I solved the audio issue as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. So are there other folks that have questions? I guess I just have a general question, which is, are you concerned about the limited amount of data that you're able to connect and having it be statistically significant, particularly in the registrar side?
I don't think we're concerned per se. I think it does obviously restrict the kind of the conclusions that we can ultimately draw. But in terms of, you know, for example, on the registrar data, the retail data that we've collected from their websites, I think it's data from registrars with a relatively large presence, and it's a decent number of registrars. Is it statistically significant per se? It might not be. But I think it's at least a good kind of picture of the market.
And I'm just assuming this, but it's often a bad idea to assume. Will we get the raw data from you as well as part of the delivery of this study?
I believe we can play
with this and generate our own cross-tabs, so to speak.
So at least some of the data that we've received is confidential, and I don't believe that we can provide it to you. There is some of the data, for example, the registrar retail data that we ourselves collected, which I would assume is public and could be provided. But I think that's a question that I will defer to some of the – or give to some of the ICANN folks on the call.
Jonathan, it's Margie, if I can jump in on
Margie,
that.
Margie, go ahead.
Yeah, because of sensitivity of price-related information, we were really careful not to even ICANN didn't have access to that data to look at that, and would, you know, be concerned about sharing that information. When we asked for it, it was under the expectation that information wouldn't be shared and would just be used on an aggregate basis for the report.
And that's part of the reason why we're a little vague in terms of how the sample itself was selected, because we didn't want it to be possible to reverse engineer who was ultimately kind of or what kind of data were included in the sample.
Yeah, I guess both of those things suggest that the data could be sanitized then in such a way that we don't know that information. I guess, just going back to the original request for this study, it's really about getting, it was primarily about pricing and some of this is going to be looking at individual cases like Dot Sucks and things like that is going to come up in our own conversations. And it was about sort of collecting pricing data and not asking you to do our work for us necessarily. And so just to the degree to which we want to look at data differently, we may end up needing to manage you past the completion of the study because Stan, Jordan, others are going to say, well, we really need to look at this, these comparisons of data as well. Because I think we're less interested in what you're concluding from the data and instead looking at the data itself as much as possible, if that makes sense. And so whatever we can work out is better understanding it might be things that you're unable to share.
No, that makes sense, Jonathan. And I think what we'll do is we can talk with Margie and others at ICANN to figure out what might make sense in terms of providing data. But your point is certainly well taken.
Stan, go ahead.
A partially answer to Johnson's question might be if we have some ideas and we don't overload the analysis group with too much work, we might ask them to consider doing some additional calculations after we've seen the first pass through the data. Is that feasible?
That's right. I guess that's what I was saying. Is that the alternative will be that we will probably be coming back to you to rewrap the data in certain ways.
Mm-hmm. No, that's understood.
Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, so I put this in chat, but just a quick question just to understand where you guys are in terms of the next phase analysis. What's the timeline and what's the process for actually doing that analysis at this point, just so we understand what the touch points are from us to you to make sure that we get you the feedback you need before actually doing the work for phase two?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we're at this point, we're close to being in a position where we'll be sending out the data request to the registrars and registries. So if, for example, there are items that you think that we should be asking for, but that we, you know, you haven't heard that we are going to be asking for, then that would be useful to know. And then it will be a little bit of a waiting period while we wait on data to come in from those data requests. But the goal is to have kind of a final phase two report completed around the same time that it was completed last year, which I think, if I recall correctly, was something like early to mid-September, maybe late September. So that's at least the current thinking. And then so there will be, you know, we'll be kind of analyzing data and writing up the report during the summer. So I think to the extent you have ideas for specific analyses that will rely on data that you know that we will have and or are requesting, then I think there's some time to get us that kind of feedback. And I think, like I said, the only really immediate thing we would need to know is thinking about the data that we're requesting from the registrars and registries. Are there key pieces that you haven't heard that we're going to ask for?
Great, thanks. And can you guys define immediately, just so we know how quickly we need to get back to you?
So the plan was to send out the data requests early next week. That said, I think there's a little bit of wiggle room in when those requests go out. So I think we could, you know, wait, whether it's a week or 2 weeks before those requests are actually sent.
Yeah, I'd suggest it would make sense at least to wait until after our in-person meeting in LA, but obviously defer to the rest of the group as to the value of timeliness versus things that we might want included in that request.
Okay.
Yeah, there'll probably be some consensus around that. I mean, it may push out the start of the study a little bit, but I think there's a desire not to get rushed at the front end too much. It's come up in the context of the Nielsen study as well. You mentioned at the top, in terms of data sources, CETO, and then later said if we get data from CETO. So I was wondering what analysis you're doing in the secondary market.
So it kind of depends on the data that we receive, obviously, but I think the goal with the secondary market data was to get a sense for example, do you see different prices being charged at different TLDs, which might suggest some kind of value that consumers place on TLDs?
At a simple level, looking at kind of the distribution of transaction prices that are happening within each TLD and kind of doing those comparisons.
And do you see, if you see the same string being sold across TLDs, do you see different prices associated with that same string?
Okay, so you already have those intentions, and have you been able to get that kind of data from CETO? I know they've published some of it.
Yeah, we unfortunately have not been able to get at least kind of the more detailed data from CETO that we were hoping to get. I don't know what that says about the likelihood of getting it in the future. But it's
okay. Yeah, you just mentioned at the top that you had data from CETO, and that's so you just meant you had tried to get data.
I think maybe there was a little misunderstanding there, Jonathan. We have unfortunately not received any data from CETO yet.
Okay. All right, thanks. I wonder if there's anything that, did they give any kind of rationale? Did they want to charge you?
So that was a situation where some of the ICANN staff were interacting with CETO to kind of directly, and we were not directly involved. My understanding is that it seemed like they were going to at least maybe be amenable to providing the data, and then the communication just went dark. So I don't think any reason was specifically given.
does anybody in staff, ICANN staff, have anything to add on that issue of secondary market data?
Jonathan, this is Karen. I'll give a little bit of recap of what Greg said. In terms of the data requests that were configured, we had those for the set of TLD registries in the sample for registrars, and then we had a request to secondary market providers, and I think that was it. But they were, a similar form of communications, and then in each of those cases where we didn't get responses, we did individual follow-up in a lot of cases. But in terms of the specific case, we didn't get a definitive, question or comment about any of their concerns. We just didn't get a response to this in terms of the data.
Okay. I mean, I think there's going to be a high interest in that type of data. As Jordan says in the chat, there is amount that's quite a bit that's public. It's not comprehensive. So, I guess we can go offline to figure out how we can get access to some data. Jordan says bring in some people who are familiar with it, but obviously we want them to bring their spreadsheets with them and not
exactly.
Just rely on people's summaries. Let's make sure that that's a high priority item for the group to see what we can do to try and get some additional data to get it to the analysis group or to incorporate it ourselves. Thanks, Jordan. That makes sense. Are there other folks with questions or suggestions for the analysis group? Okay, well, we're at the top of the hour here. I think, as Jordan has suggested, we'll probably try to form a little bit of a sub-team to talk about these issues and then try to very quickly get back to you. But if it's possible and I think we can push out the data request until after we get together in person, that would probably be ideal. It's just in a couple of weeks.
Okay, yeah, I think that should work well from our perspective. And we really appreciate all the feedback, and we look forward to kind of continuing the conversation offline.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. All right, bye.
Thank you, everyone. Moving along in our agenda, the next item was an update from the Terms of Reference Working Group, and Jonathan sent around a draft earlier today, last night for some of us, with kind of three high-level questions that are remaining to help us finalize this draft. Jonathan, do you want to talk through them or anyone else who is in the working group?
Sure. I'll try to get things started, but obviously welcome anybody to speak up that's been participating in this terms of reference discussion. We were trying to get past the wordsmithing of the overall document and mostly accepted the changes that was made wherever it was sort of grammatical or logical or clarifying, and tried to get to a clean document where we might have a higher level discussion. And the questions that seem to percolate to the top of that from the document and from the comments in the margin of the old document, as well as the last working group call, were these three. And so I just was hoping that we could focus on getting these questions discussed and answered in the next half hour here, and we'll incorporate those into the document and rather than just trying to scroll through the document line by line on the call. And so some folks have already begun to answer these questions, and in the text but I wanted to kind of, maybe we should bring up the definition section in the document, because those are short enough, and those seem to be really where we're trying to get ourselves together. So, Aliza, if it's possible, can you bring up the definition section of the document, and we'll just jump in there. So the definition of competition is really just a very slightly modified version of the one that Jordan submitted. But it is a broader definition than David was looking for, and so I wanted to, and those were folks that were on the working group, and so I wanted to open that up for the larger larger group to see how they felt about that. I know David wasn't ready to die on his sword over this issue of market definition, but I wanted to give David a chance to make his point and also have some discussion with the broader group on this particular issue. So as you can see right now, competition is defined as the effort of two or more parties in the domain name ecosystem, including but not limited to registries, registrars, resellers, registry service providers, and registrants, acting independently to secure the business of a third party by offering innovative products and services and or the most favorable terms. That's the competition definition as it now stands. I'd like to open it up for conversation. Maybe the two things that I think would be interesting to hear about for the whole group is from Jordan on what he means by the competition among registrants, and from David on his point about limiting this to registry service providers. So if I can get the two of you guys to speak up for the group, that would be great.
Sure. This is Jordan. Happy to answer your first question first, if that's the order we want to take it. The example I gave on list of competition between registrants is, and to be clear, I don't necessarily agree with the premise I'm about to raise, but it's certainly been something that various people have raised, and we should probably get to the bottom of whether if there is an effect or not. But Barnes & Noble owns book.com. Some people have asserted that having access to this valuable generic name gives them some sort of competitive advantage in the marketplace. So people that will just type in book.com into their browser will end up at Barnes & Noble as opposed to some other place. And so maybe this gives them some advantage over an upstart bookseller like Amazon or something like that. And so if we had a new TLD introduced like .shop and Amazon was able to register book.shop, would this allow them to compete more effectively against the mean incumbent Barnes & Noble with book.com by virtue of their awesome new GTLD name that would help them compete more effectively based on their good domain name? That's effectively the question that I'd be interested in understanding. There's probably better examples than that, obviously. I'm being a little sarcastic in the example, but there are probably places where there are valuable existing domain names and perhaps valuable by version of because of their generic nature as opposed to their brand equity. And does it help rivals to come in and be able to get stronger alternative generic names to compete with them?
Sorry, I muted myself. Carlos, is your question related to Jordan's statement?
Yes, it's directly related.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Carlos. Jordan, I missed just one point there. I see a similar case in countries that have capital restrictions where paying money abroad is difficult. You cannot pay in dollars abroad because there are capital controls. And then the CCTLD of your country costs so much money when you are in the country, but the CCTLD operator also resells this domain name through GoDaddy or somebody else to a lower price outside of the country. So the part I'm missing you is what makes the difference would be a price difference in the retail price. Otherwise, I cannot bring it down to specifics. I don't know if you're here. Thank you.
So Carlos, I would view that as being then you might see competition between either registrars or different suppliers for registrants. The specific question I was answering for Jonathan is, what I meant by enabling competition between registrants as a result of the introduction of new GTLDs. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yes, but I need some kind of barrier or reference. I mean, competition based on what? On price or on what? Your question is just too general. I cannot.
It's not on price. Some people have asserted that valuable generic names give some sort of competitive advantage. And perhaps in particular, .com names are more valuable and give a bigger competitive advantage. Or it might be the case in a CC, in a, you know, book, wouldn't be book. I don't speak German. Let's say book.co.uk or the equivalent of book.de. Those names might give an advantage to an incumbent in the marketplace in those specific countries, or book.com maybe more generically, and would the introduction of new GTLDs allow upstarts or rivals to compete more effectively with people that had these valuable existing domain names?
And it may be, Jordan, that Carlos is saying that and I think this is encompassed in the definition, and so it's not something we need to resolve, but that if book.com was out in the premium market, but book.shop wasn't, that it might be easier for an upstart registrant to get what would otherwise be considered a premium name in a new domain because there would be a price difference. I think that might be what Carlos was
saying.
Sure,
I think that gets back to
the definition.
Yeah. But I guess I would say that gets back to that's competition for the registrant, right? Like that's to people.
Well,
maybe
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
It is, but is that really competition for? Is the cheaper availability of book.shop likely to get Barnes and Noble to buy it, or is it something that enables market entry because it's cheaper? I guess I think that might be the question Carlos was raising. But again, I don't know this is a question we need to answer. I think it's covered by including registrants in the definition, which is really all we're discussing right now. So we don't need to solve this problem right now, but I think that I was just trying to clarify what I thought might be Carlos's question. Because otherwise, why wouldn't Barnes & Noble just simply buy all of the...
I mean, maybe they would. Sure, maybe they would. Like I said, I'm not sure I agree with the hypothesis behind my question. Other people have asserted that domain names somehow convey a competitive advantage in the marketplace. And so if you accept that hypothesis, valuable domain names give you a competitive advantage in the marketplace, then you would assume that there would be a corollary to that, that if there were new alternatives to that valuable domain name, that they might allow effective competition with that incumbent position.
That's right. Stan, you've had your hand up.
I think it's an interesting question, but I think it takes us a bit far afield. I mean, I'm worried enough about us understanding competition among registries and competition among registrars. Are we going to really analyze competition in the market for the retail sale of books or autos or wine or whatever? That seems to me to take us very far afield and can be very far from our what should be our terms of reference.
Okay. Thanks, Stan. Are there others
views on this, on this notion, because this is something we just need to make a decision about. David, go ahead. Carlos, I'm assuming that's an old hand.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think that ties in really to what I was raising on the last call, because you know, on the terms of reference subgroup call I'm referring to there, when I was looking at that definition of competition, I was wondering whether the way it was set out could either hinder our review, I suppose, or take us into the area which we might or we shouldn't be going, because obviously there's very complex interactions between all the players in the ecosystem, the registries, registrars, registrants, resellers, etc. And that really my point. I was just wondering, should we not be concentrating on the registry level competition and the others, not putting them out to graze, that they still have an impact and we're going to have to look at that. But to me, it was a secondary impact. And otherwise, it just felt like if we're not careful, we're just going to get way too complicated. It was really just highlighting that it was something which we need to be very careful on. I didn't want to see a definition which comes back to haunt us after 6 months, where we suddenly find we need to be doing things always somewhere where we don't want to be. And I gained some sort of comfort for that, because looking at the, you know, ICANN's commitment, this is what we discussed in the call, on the introduction of new GTLDs, where they were promoting, the goal of it was to promote the competition, the domain name market, whilst ensuring security and stability, etc. But there they were quite specific, it was facilitating competition amongst registry service providers, and there was no mention at that point of registrars, registrants, etc. So that's why I was thinking, okay, that's what we need to concentrate on. But, you know, and I put that in emails with Jordan just recently, which you may not have had a chance to see yet, Jordan, but I completely see where you're coming from with the book example, and I think it's a great example. And I think it really goes to the point of how do we interact with that, because if someone's got book.com, then someone else, well, I want to get .book, because that gains my level back up in competitiveness. And then that also may make books.com more valuable, because book.com has been sold, so suddenly that goes up. And then we've got the level of, well, under .shop, etc. And we just, it's a very complex environment. And, you know, one interacting with the other. So, really, I was just wanting to know how we're going to go about it. And I was just flagging it as something to which we do need to think about and get us all on board. But as I said, I don't wish to die. I don't think it's not something which is critical that we have to have that sort of definition.
Yeah, and it's not clear that Jordan's willing to fall on his sword over having registrants included necessarily. I guess the question could be whether or not we can phrase this in such a way that we don't demand the inclusion of registrants in this study, but leave room for the possibility that they come up. Including but not limited to, seems there might be more, but it doesn't suggest that there might be less. I mean, the way out of this might be to suggest the possibility that we'll look at some subset of these things, for example, or something like that. The other question I have for you, Jordan, is that I feel like competition, the way we're defining it, actually has to do with whether or not we've created an environment to incentivize competition and competitive behavior. And it feels like your registrant example feels a little different than incentivization for competitive behavior and more about facilitation. I don't know, but Jordan, you've got your hand up.
Sure. So first I want to say I agree with Stan that actually analyzing this question of competition between registrants may be particularly challenging, and it may be that, to rephrase what Jamie said on the list earlier today, we don't want to try to boil the ocean necessarily. I think it would be a mistake to say that this is not in the scope of the charter of the review, but we could say, as we get to turn to the work plan discussion, that we only have a year to do this, and this question, while hypothetically interesting, is not one that we're going to get to in this round, and limit the scope of what we intend to do in the work plan as opposed to in the charter. Although, as you said, I don't necessarily need to die on my sword on this one. I do think it would be a little strange to say, oh, we care about competition between the intermediaries, but we don't actually view domain names themselves as interesting enough to care about how they affect the behavior and the sort of prime. And if we don't think, like, I think we have to assume that, like, domains have some value in helping companies be competitive in the marketplace. Otherwise, like, everyone would just register ll97pwk.com or something like that, as opposed to going to these new GTLDs or paying premium prices for aftermarket names or something like that. And it seems odd to me that we would say, like, oh, we just don't think that that falls in the scope of competition, but we may totally reasonably say that we don't have the time to look at it, and I think that would be a completely reasonable conclusion to make.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. Other folks, I know some people have been commenting in the chat. Does anybody want to raise their hand and speak up? I want to resolve this issue today, if we can, on the on how we define competition. So,
sorry, Jonathan, it's Jordan again. The one other thing I wanted to add, though, I do think it would be a mistake to limit this purely to registry competition. I think certainly, like, the analysis group, as you pointed out, the analysis group study has already taken a look at registrar competition, and certainly the domain intermediaries seem like obvious places that we ought to be looking at in terms of the effect of the introduction of new GTLDs. And we're already seeing, looks like from the analysis group, for example, that, like, GoDaddy's has a much lower market share of new GTLDs versus legacy GTLDs, and that seems like a significant finding.
That's right. I think that's right. Thank you, Jordan. Anyone else? I mean, I'm worried I'm going to miss something here in the chat. Megan is on a bunch of different issues. Are there other issues related to Megan? Should we look at two-tiered competition at registry level first, and then later at a broader level? I'm not sure I understand that point. Carlos, go ahead.
Yes, trying to come to the point, I think the definition of competition is pretty broad, and it should remain as broad as possible for the time being. I would not object at the text that we're looking at. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I was in the unfortunate position of representing the ALAC on the discussion with analysis group, but Carlton is here now. I don't know if you want to raise the ALAC related issue of competition from what can be called the third level registration, social media and things like that. That came to me from ALAC, and I wanted to make sure that it was raised, but I don't know if Carlton, you want to speak to that at all. Do we have good audio from Carlton yet? We haven't tried. No. Carlton, we still can't hear you, I'm sorry to say. We really need to devote some time to fixing your audio. Folks on staff, if we can set aside some time to do some tests before the next call, that'd be good, because this is the third call where we haven't been able to hear Carlton. So let's try to figure out how to solve that. I have a request from Ivan Leibovich from the ALAC, who was part of the work group that came up with the metrics and was the champion of this social media question. I wonder if the group would object to having him ask a question or make a comment here on this in this discussion, given that we can't hear from Carlton. Does anybody object to that? He just sent me an email. He's in the observer room, but can't ask questions in this. And I think we made a discussion about not having substitutes and non-active observers, which I don't want to turn into a trend, but I'm just concerned about the fact that Carlton isn't able to communicate effectively. Carlos, go ahead. Is that a new hand?
Sorry.
Okay. Does anyone object to me letting Evan speak on this call in lieu of Carlton just for this near term special exception? Okay, so I'm going to try to get a number for him and have staff just call out to him just for purposes of this part of the discussion.
Jonathan, we just left into the room.
Okay. Evan, are you on audio? I see a microphone. We don't hear you though.
How about now?
Yes. Okay, we hear you now.
Hi, Jonathan. And thanks for considering letting me in. I understand the circumstances. I'm mainly here because, as you said, I was involved in some of the early work in trying to deal with the ALAC metrics and so on. So was there a specific issue you wanted me to talk on at this moment?
Yes. The issue that ALAC raised in particular that's relevant to this conversation right now is in our definition of competition, we're talking about who to include. And I heard from you guys that you wanted to raise the issue of a competition from the third-level domain. So, like, Facebook and Blogger and Wix and all these all sort of alternatives to getting your own domain name as a form of web presence. And I just wanted to give you a chance to kind of make that case for the group as we're discussing Snoop.
Okay. So I'll try and make it as briefly and succinctly as I can. The issues that ALAC wanted to raise at the time were dealing with competition as not simply being competition between So the issue I wanted to raise is that the competition that we were talking about was not just necessarily within the domain industry. That is, not just between registries and not just between registrars. But in fact, the competition literally between the domain name system and other ways of finding something on the internet. So if to use the books example that you were using earlier, so somebody would go to books.com, they could go to something.books. On the other hand, if I just wanted somebody to go to Evan's bookstore, I could buy evansbookstore.com, evans.books, or whatever, but what is happening, at least in the findings that we had within ALAC, is a lot of people were just saying as an alternative, well, screw that all, and let's just, when you publicize yourself, search for Evans Bookstore on Google, or search for Evans Bookstore on Bing, or search for Evans Bookstore on Facebook, and you'll get there as a superior way to the DNS. And so, yes, at a certain level, this all goes to a domain name, but as was mentioned earlier, you could use some human indecipherable domain name that was just pointed to by a search engine. And so that's, I think, what I was referring to early on when we were trying to talk about a bigger picture, that the competition that we're envisioning is not simply within the various TLDs, not within the various registrars, but in fact between the domain name system and other methods that people use on the internet to get to a specific destination. Am I making myself clear with that?
Yeah, I think so. Stan, do you have a question for Evan or a statement on this particular topic?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Is that something that we can get Nielsen to address in their consumer survey?
It was something that the ALAC had put forward originally in the list of metrics that we were hoping would be addressed through this process. Whether or not that is what was given to Nielsen or not, I don't recall. As Jonathan knows, I've been out of the process. I've been off ALAC for some time because of a position I've taken at the UN. But the original intention and the original request from ALAC was that that big picture issue be addressed as well as the other ones. I can't speak for whether or not that's being implemented properly at this point.
Stan, I think the answer is yes. We have the power to get some questions put in there if we can find something, a good way to craft them to get some feedback on that issue about whether people are just deserting the DNS or finding it more interesting to use Facebook instead.
I know I have a series of additional questions for Nielsen, so we should talk about the process of getting questions, additional questions to them if there's still time.
Yes, okay. Let's have that conversation then. Lisa, can you make a note to, or whoever's managing the notes, to talk about Nielsen and the questions in the next survey? And Aliza, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I'm happy to take note of that. I just wanted to add that is something that we have asked in the surveys, in both the consumer and registrant surveys, is preferences for navigating to domain names, using different tools and things like that. But there may be different ways to ask that question, and that's something we can discuss with Nielsen at your face-to-face in Ally.
So we're not going to field the survey until after the face-to-face, so that won't be too late to affect the survey. Is that right, Aliza?
That's correct. We were planning on fielding it until March in any case. So we have some time.
Okay, great. Carlton, you still have your hand up. Are you going to try again to speak, or
this is Carlton.
It just seems to give a bad connection.
Evan just made the case for me, so I don't need to.
Wow, that's the clearest I've ever heard your voice. It's very, very dim, but at least I'm hearing words now instead of guttural sounds. So that's exciting. We just need to work on the volume.
Okay,
does anybody else have any questions or comments for Evan related to this issue on competition? Carlton, I put your hand out if you would. Okay, so I guess what I'd like to, there's also the notion that we ought to keep this definition broad in the charter, and then, as Jordan suggested, refine what we actually have bandwidth to work on in the coming year as part of the work plan. Do people feel agreement with that notion that we shouldn't be trying too hard to limit scope in the charter itself, but should do it in the work plan? I mean, it means we'll just be doing it in the next conversation. But I think Jordan's point is that we've established some boundaries for this topic as a whole. It may get addressed by a future review team, even if we don't do it. So I guess I put that question up for a vote on the group, which is how many people, please give a green tick if you're supportive of the notion of keeping the definition broad here for whose competition we're looking at, and then we and we refine it as a practical matter in the work plan. So I still see Jamie Boil the Ocean Headland is still concerned about this. There's some other folks here, Kali, Karen, Laureen, Megan, is it your belief that we ought to try to fight this out in terms of the overall definition now? Megan, you have your hand up. Go ahead, please. Megan, we can't hear you if you're speaking. Are you muted? Megan? Maybe you've double muted. That happens sometimes. All right, I was waiting for Megan to type commenting. No, no possibility to speak. Okay. All right, Laureen, go ahead.
Okay, and I am, I'll start off with an apology, but I have to admit I'm just a little confused about where we are with this definition and what options we're choosing between. And at least it would help me if you can succinctly tell me what the options are we're considering.
Sure, Laureen, thanks, and sorry for the confusion. Right now, it's a fairly broad definition, and if we broaden it to potentially include social media, it may be too broad a definition for us to tackle. So the question is, do we need to make that decision here in the charter in terms of the definition of competition, or is that really a practical matter for what we can get done in the limited time we have, and we make those sort of practical limitations on scope as part of the work plan, but leave the chartered definition broader to preserve flexibility for the work group and for the review team and for the future review teams? That was Jordan's recommendation that a couple of people have endorsed. Does that make more sense?
Yes, that does make more sense. And my tendency is always to preserve our flexibility to adjust as we see the situation unfold. But at the same time, I'm also mindful that we don't want to be so broad that we're not able to take a meaningful and practical dive into what really matters. So I don't know how helpful that is, but I think those are my two concerns. One, we should preserve flexibility, but two, at some point, we need to make sure that we're focusing on something meaningful and practical so we can get the work done.
Okay, great. And I think that both of those concerns are addressed in a way in this distinction between the charter and the work plan. I mean, our very next conversation here is the work plan. And so we will have some conversation about what's possible to include. So based on these check marks and what I'm reading in the chat, I think we have a majority view in favor of a broader definition of competition here in the charter, and that we will then refine what we're actually going to have a chance to look at in the time that we have as part of our work plan.
But Jonathan, this is Laurie again. I also do want to make sure we get to the definitions of consumer trust and consumers.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I'm sorry, I didn't mean by the very next conversation.
Okay, I just want to make sure those are on our next to-do list.
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean the very next conversation. I meant after this document that we would be going into the work plan. Okay, so I think that's our definition on competition. Jordan has also asked that market just be part of the competition definition. It doesn't feel so strongly. It felt more like an additional description beyond the definition, Jordan, and because there was a request on the last call for markets to be addressed, it felt like it made sense to split this out. So if you'd like to make a case for this that you think will have a practical effect on our work, then I would ask you to make it. Otherwise, I might ask you to grin and bear this so that we could move on. But Jordan, go ahead.
Sure. The really quick case I'll make is just I think actually it's consistent with the way we've defined other terms as well, which is they're practical definitions in the context of our work as opposed to pure definitions of the terms. And I think, therefore, just saying here's what competition means in the scope of our work as opposed to having this ancillary definition you have to look to understand what the scoping exercise looks like seems better to me. But like I said, I'll grin and bear it if people really like having it split out.
Okay. Does anybody else have a thought on this? I mean, I don't. It's just text. I don't feel strongly about it. So, I mean, I can go either way personally. Laureen, is that an old hand, or do you want to speak to that?
Oh, it's an old hand. I'll put it down.
Okay. Does anyone else feel strongly about this? I guess, Jordan, since there was some request to talk about the market, I'm inclined to just leave it. If you don't feel too strongly and the rest of the group doesn't feel too strongly, just so that we don't end up having the other conversation again. So why don't we move on then to questions about the other definitions. So I know that Megan and Laureen both had issues with limiting choice to registrants, and I'd be interested in having you make one of the two of you or both of you making your case there on consumer choice. So either Laureen or Megan, if you could speak up, that would be great. Oh, right, and Megan doesn't have audio. So, Laureen, let me call on you. Thank you.
Sure. And Megan, I'm sure, will jump in with typing to add whatever I'm missing. But in terms of consumer choice, this seems to me to be limited because, of course, in addition to the folks who are going to be buying the domain names, there are also the folks who are using them, and this definition seems to basically eliminate the public at large in terms of what impact the new GTLDs have on them, at least vis-a-vis their choices. So that seems to me to be a problem.
So could you give us a hypothetical as to how you imagine the introduction of new TLDs would affect the broader market of consumers? I understand your point in the abstract. I don't understand it as a practical matter.
I guess just in terms of consumers' ability to figure out which places they're going to go to. If they're going to, for example, I'll go back to the bookstore definition. When they are trying to search for a bookstore, does the fact that they can do a search for all the entities that have a .book. DTLD mean they have more choices than just the legacy GTLDs. And I guess it's a separate issue of, well, is that really meaningful? Do we really care about it? But it just does strike me as something that goes to the public's choices of how they are finding businesses or entities that they want to do business with. And that's just a business example. That's separate and apart from, you know, other examples that, you know, for example, for socializing.
Okay. I mean, I guess these are labels on destinations, and the destinations themselves represent the choice. So the question would then become whether or not the availability of new labels actually led to the availability of new destinations. Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, so I had thought about the end user aspect of this discussion being more relevant to consumer trust than consumer choice. But I guess I can see the point how maybe if you now have an option to go to if you speak Japanese and now you can go to a Japanese script domain name to access a bookstore or something like that, that might be some meaningful version of consumer choice. I think we could address this fairly easily by just changing the word registrant to consumer in the definition, and that would capture both end users as well as registrants based on our above definition of consumer.
Okay. Is everybody comfortable with that change? Okay, so yeah, the IDN example is an interesting one. Let's just go ahead and make a note, Elisa, that we'll change that to consumers. And Evan, just so that you know, I know that some of this is about the rhetoric and semantics of these discussions, but we did define consumer to include users in our document, even though you're right in saying that often consumer doesn't imply a non-consuming end user, but we've included them in our definition. So if we include them here in the consumer choice definition, we are bringing in users as well. Okay, are there other issues on consumer choice, or do we move on to trust? Was there another issue there on somebody had raised on trust? Laureen, I can't remember if you had an issue on the definition of trust or if you were happy with that.
I did have an issue, and I think also Drew has a similar issue. Maybe Drew wants to speak since folks have heard from me a little bit during this conversation. I'm happy to speak to it, though, if Drew has connectivity issues.
Okay, great. Drew, I see your hand is up, so please go ahead. Drew, we can't hear you if you're speaking. You might be muted. Now you're definitely muted.
I can jump in. Ugh, thwarted again.
Hey, go ahead,
Drat. Hey, I think that Drew and I share the concern, and again, Drew can jump in if I'm missing something, that the current definition of consumer trust doesn't get at what I think is actually one of the most crucial issues, which is end users' trust of the Internet is really affected by their fear of either getting ripped off or being subject to some sort of illicit behavior like farming or phishing or being deceived in some way. And this definition of consumer trust doesn't explicitly get at that.
Then number two.
I think that was sort of authenticity and also number two, but I guess I don't have a problem with, I think that was meant to be kind of built into the authenticity of the domain name system, but I don't know that I have a problem adding a line. We're just trying to keep these things tight, but adding a line about their overall trust in the internet. I think, Lorena, it was you that had mentioned Nielsen asking whether people would share their credit card information, for example, online as a behavioral measure of trust, rather than asking people whether they trust the internet. But
that's right.
So. I mean, so I think what you're describing is generally agreed upon, and it was intended to be implied or encapsulated with things like authenticity. We can add a line about maybe you could take it as a job to email us a line that you think could be added to this to incorporate it.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to confer with Drew on that, and Megan, and we can come up with something. And anyone else who has thoughts on it, I'm happy to take that into consideration as I propose something for the group.
Okay. And Jamie's asked the question: aren't we most concerned with consumer trust in the new G space? And We keep coming back to that, and I think that's not the case. I think we're looking at the impact of the new GTLD program on the broader space. And how we define it. We may still have a question of, practical scope that we need to address, in our work plan. But I think there's basically been a consensus in the group that we can't confine ourselves to just how consumers are doing in the new GTLD space, but whether or not they've had an impact on competition and choice and trust overall, seems to be the consensus of the group. Did you want to speak to that? Was that you, Jamie, that spoke up?
Yeah, sure. So just quickly, I guess the concern is if we find out that consumers are getting to use Lorraine's words, ripped off at the same rate in legacy TLDs as they were the introduction of new GTLDs, I don't think that's meaningful. And whereas what is meaningful is that there are a whole lot of protections introduced into the new GTLDs that do not exist in legacy TLDs. And so what would be meaningful is whether they're the same, I don't even know if you can measure this, but the same levels of abuse with the new Gs as there are in legacy. So you could look at it. Again, it's just, I think to repeat something I said earlier, if we are not disciplined in the questions that we are asking, we'll end up looking at a much broader question than the one I think we are tasked with, which is, what's the impact of new G?
But again, the impact of them, I think it can't be confined to them. I mean, I think that we're trying. I think the question you're asking is still a good one, which is there a difference between the two? But I think it's also about whether or not it's bringing about an overall difference in how people feel about.
But again, I think it's about the DNS.
Does Dot Bank make people feel less worried about phishing, for example?
When they're in Dot Bank, which is a new GTLD, rather than do they feel more comfortable with the internet, writ large, as a result of measures that Dot Bank has introduced.
Right. Drew, you have your hand up. Do you want to try again to speak? No. Okay, Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, so I just want to be a little cautious. So I agree with regards to competition there we're looking at the effects of the introduction of new GTLDs on a market that includes other domain names, including legacy GTLDs and as well as ccTLDs. It is not as obvious to me by any measure that when we look at consumer trust and consumer trust in particular, that the legacy or ccTLD space is obviously in scope, unless you believe that somehow the introduction of new Gs changes people's trust in the legacy system as well. And at least that interaction is not obvious to me in the same way it is in the case of competition, where there's, you know, presumably some, it's obvious that some people would choose to register a new G as opposed to an alternative TLD.
So, I mean, I guess the trust issue, it feels less about registrants and more about the end users. And that's sort of how we did both types of surveys. But, I mean, so I guess it's the end user trust that we're talking about a little bit right now. And so the question is, for example, is the fact that there's 1,800 TLDs, has that increased confusion of users, for example, and therefore decreased their overall trust? Could be a question that affects the DNS as a whole. I mean, I guess that's one example that comes into my mind. I'm concerned about missing other examples.
Yeah. So I think that's fine. As long as we're limiting our scope to things where there's a direct nexus to the introduction of new GTLDs, I'm just worried. I don't want us to spend our time saying, like, are there botnets on the Internet? I mean, of course there are, and that is not different today than it was prior to the new GTLDs, the introduction of new GTLDs.
Right.
I think there has to be a very high burden of proof before we start to look at sort of related phenomenon like that. And so I'm nervous about pulling too broad a definition of into this to get us sort of off on distracting wild goose chases as opposed to focusing on changes that are brought about by the introduction of the new GTLDs.
Right. And so maybe that's just a language clarification that we should only be looking at changes that were brought about by the introduction of GTLDs. I mean, I think that's where there's some consensus. And Jamie seems to be signifying that that gets to his concern as well. Maybe we just need to add we're just trying to define trust, and it was implied because of the nature of our charter that this were only things that were directly affected by the introduction of new GTLDs. We can add a line here to underscore that fact, if that would address people's concerns. Okay. I see Carlton and Jordan's comments seem to be in rough agreement. Laureen, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to loop back to the point that Jamie made, which I thought was a very good one in terms of the fact that there are certain safeguards that were instituted in connection with the new GTLDs that aren't even present in the legacy GTLDs, and that would be an interesting... That's an interesting issue to explore, both in terms of the surveys regarding whether, in fact, the new safeguards, the public interest commitments, are actually being abided by, and also in terms of whatever comparisons we're thinking about that we're able to do in the context of our mandate, does this introduction of these safeguards has that had an impact on the system as a whole? I think it's just an interesting comparison, but we'd have to be careful because it's not apples to apples, because the safeguards are in connection with the new GTLDs and not the legacy GTLDs.
That makes sense. Other comments then on this definition? Okay, so we... Oh, Laureen, did you put your hand back up? I thought I saw it go down, and now it's back
no,
up.
No, no, I need to take it down.
Okay. Any other comments on this? So we're going to try to add a line that gets specifically to this issues of, you know, underscoring these issues of overall concerns with using the Internet. And then we will all take to heart the scoping that we want to only look at issues of consumer trust that might reasonably be connected to the introduction of the new TDLTs. Difference between 5. Oh, Jordan's question, the difference between 1 and 5. Consistency of name resolution means if I, you know, type in a name, I get to that site, and I guess the 5 was more broadly, again, trying to touch on this other issue, which is, you know, does the system work for me? Is it too confusing? So 1 was sort of a technical, and 5 was more about, you know, do users feel that they're able to navigate the Internet?
Yeah,
Jordan, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, so maybe we can just edit this offline. The word searching just seems like a strange word to use in conjunction with the domain name system, since it's a precise match system.
Right.
So... you know, maybe reach the site that they intend or something like that.
And that's fine. Let's just make a note of that, Elisa. Okay, and then Carlos, we have a question now on the relevant market paragraph.
Yes, please, may I?
Yes, go ahead.
I respect the relevant markets a lot. It's a very important instrument in the telecom market, and there is a lot of literature about that. My question is, do we need to relevant markets? Because I don't feel comfortable with the second sentence. Thank you.
Okay, which second sentence? You mean beginning with however?
Exactly.
So what is your concern with that? It's just saying the competitive dynamics in the domain name ecosystem unrelated to the introduction of new GTLDs are not in the scope of this review.
Well, yes, this is Carlos again for the record.
That's what we've been saying for a lot of this discussion.
Yes, but on the other hand, Evan's discussion and the discussion how people use the Internet are within this exclusion. I mean, if people are using apps or search engines, well, that's the dynamics of the market. So after having heard 10, 15 minutes of all the user behavior and the possibility of introducing these questions in the Nielsen report, this sentence seems to exclude the whole discussion, so I don't feel I need more clarity there.
Oh, I see. I don't think it excludes them. I think it just gets to this notion of looking at what the source of the change is. In other words, we can't look at general trends that are happening that are completely unrelated to the introduction of new GTLDs. So that doesn't. So to the extent to which the introduction of new GTLDs has pulled market share away from Facebook because people could get more interesting names, sites for their bands, or it's increased confusion and driven people to Facebook, those are both relevant with this definition, but the notion is that it still needs to be linked somehow to the introduction of new GTLDs.
Okay, I feel a little bit better. Let's leave it there, but I don't want to have these behavioral issues of the consumer outside of the scope. Thank you very much.
So, I mean, I think Jordan's suggesting that we won't find a correlation, and that's fine. I mean, that's different than not looking. So, I mean, I think it's just a question of suggesting that what we are looking for is our competitive dynamics that have been directly impacted by the introduction of new GTLDs. That's all the second system. So it's not excluding types of competitive dynamics, just the source of the change. Okay. Stan, oh. Did I address your question, Stan? Looks like it, perhaps. Okay. So I'm just getting the hook. It looks like we may not get to the work plan because that conversation just became more critical with our definition of competition. So we'll need to pick that up on the next call. But I think we have, with some slight modifications we've made note about, we have a workable charter here. Does anybody have any other business they want to bring up here at the end? Oh, Laureen wants to still discuss the definition of consumer. I didn't realize that was an open issue. So do you want to bring that up quickly, Laureen? And if folks have to drop off, I understand.
Actually, I think we probably want to have more than a it's probably not that conducive to being brought up quickly. So maybe when I send something around versus consumer trust, I'll also send something around with the definition of consumer. But to echo what Megan had said in the chat, this seems to really focus on registrants as consumer, which strikes me as fairly narrow, although it does have the broader reference to Internet users. But I just think it's a little skewed in terms of its focus.
Okay. All right. Okay. I don't want to have a it has both, and I don't know that it puts an emphasis on either one of them. I look forward to your email and seeing it. I mean, this definition has survived lots of public comments and things like that. So I mean, I don't understand your concern. So maybe I will need to wait for your email to understand it better if you have a recommendation there. Megan, I'll look at your chat comment as well. If you think it's a broader conversation, we can push that part of it to the next call.
Just as a lead, our next call would actually be your LA face-to-face meeting on the 22nd and 23rd. Perhaps this and the work plan can be our first agenda items for that meeting.
All right, that sounds good.
And I think Margie wanted to add something as well.
I guess the question is, do we want to have a call before that? I mean, before the face-to-face meeting. Just a question.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Carlton, we can definitely see the marked-up document before then. I mean, the problem is just whether or not we want to try to resolve this conversation so that we have more focused discussions about the data that we'll be looking at in the discussions of the analysis group and Nielsen at the face-to-face. So, Jordan, did you go back and find the comment, and it was just about the order that they were in?
Yeah, that's correct.
If that's the issue, then I'm happy to switch the order as well. So we'll make that change as well. So then we, if that's the key to the change, then let's we'll go ahead and make it and see if there's other issues that come up. But maybe we are close to having this done, so that it doesn't need to be on the agenda for the face to face. But definitely the work plan will be, and I think that's probably something worthy of the face to face. Circulate a new version of this in the next couple of days with the minor changes that have come up, but they seem to be largely minor changes, even though they're the results of fairly extensive conversation. And I look forward to seeing you all at the face-to-face in LA. Thanks a lot for your participation on the call.
Thank you.
Thanks.